The Accidental Entrepreneur is brought to you through our affiliate relationships with the following sponsors: Digital Accelerant, the digital mobile business card that generates leads. Text the word LAW to 21,000 to get connected and learn how to get your own digital business card. And by Fetch Internet and Fetch Pro, the secure, high-speed app that eliminates the need to pay for hotspots or use public unsecure Wi-Fi. And Printify, the online, on-demand print shop for all your corporate merchandise. Be sure to visit our online store and get your own podcast merch. Listen to all of our sponsors' commercials later in this episode and follow their links in the show notes to learn more about their products and services.
That's where the type A in me is a little, kicks in, because I trust my own quality control, but it's very hard for me to let go. Another avenue would be to license the patent. And that would be the easiest thing to do because it's a fabulous product. And if I could get somebody else to manufacture it, then
and just take a royalty.
Exactly. I would take a royalty. I would step away and then I could continue moving on to the next idea. And I do actually have a next idea in the works as well.
Oh, there you go. Good. Yes. All right. So you have some sales. So, maybe you're getting ready for Shark Tank.
Possibly, it's
and really some fun. Of those guys love licensing deals. They love that stuff.
Oh, I know Mr. Wonderful loves the licensing deals.
They eat this stuff up. They'll be like, yeah, I'll take, $2 a unit. Let's license it and be done with it.
Exactly. So most people I talk to actually think that that's probably the route I should take because it is the easiest as opposed to, as opposed to trying to get a warehouse and get people to sew. Then you have workman's comp, you have insurance and all of that. So my husband and I right now are working on the business plan and the cost of goods to see exactly how many units I need to sell in order to break even and then what my margin needs to be.
The information provided in these episodes is for entertainment purposes only. It is not a guarantee of success or to be construed as advice of any kind. You should always seek advice from local licensed professionals before making any decisions.
The dictionary defines an entrepreneur as a person who organizes and manages any enterprise, especially a business, usually with considerable initiative and risk. People often start a business without much choice, perhaps due to a job loss or just being dissatisfied at work, and they come up with an idea they just know can be successful. They become entrepreneurs by accident. That is to say, their success or failure happens by accident, not with intention. My name is Mitch Beinhacker. I'm a corporate attorney and a business advisor. You're listening to The Accidental Entrepreneur, my podcast about how to achieve success on purpose, not by accident. Join me along with our monthly guests where we share our knowledge and help you get a hold of your business. And now on to today's episode. Just to remind you, the podcast is produced and brought to you by my legal practice, Beinhacker Law. We provide business and estate services to entrepreneurs, inventors, and other small business owners. Whether you're just getting started or you've been operating for a long time, contact us for all your general legal needs, from contracts to client agreements, from purchasing a new location to onboarding a new partner or key employee. We draft all types of agreements and handle most business transactions. For more information about our products and services, visit beinhackerlaw.com or you can follow our link in the show notes. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoyed today's interview.
My name is Lynn Eichenbaum. I'm a stay-at-home mom turned entrepreneur with a patented line of sleeved gardening gloves called Garden Sleeves. I have a colorful and creative background from my humble beginnings in upstate New York to ABC television to author to entrepreneur, and I'm excited to share my story with you.
All right, Lynn. So we are we're recording. We're on the show. And I was telling you that I got the gloves.
Yay.
So I haven't used them yet, but they do fit me very well. I'll put them on. And I also understand, I know we're jumping around, we're going to talk about your background and everything like that. But I think Andrea told me you changed the name of the company now.
I did.
Okay. It's called Garden Gloves now. It's not called something else.
So it's called Garden Sleeves. My product are garden sleeves, which makes a lot of sense because as you can tell, you've got your glove, you've got your attached sleeve, and they're garden sleeves. Originally, I had called my company Nompi, which stands for No More Poison Ivy. And which is really cute. So that's still the name of my company. I'm the Nompi Glove Company. But I would spend so much time at trade shows explaining the name to people. And I honestly was walking out of trade shows with migraines. And I realized after my Syracuse show in August that I needed to do something with the name, because a friend of mine had said, if people don't understand the name within 10 seconds of you showing your product, then something's wrong.
Right. They're not going to remember the product, right?
Exactly. So I patented my garden sleeves with a nice pretty S in the middle, one word. My garden sleeves is the website. My garden sleeves is my Facebook. It's my Instagram. Perfect. And it just made a lot more sense.
So you learn as you go.
You learn as you go. Exactly.
And we're going to talk, you're going to get into your background a little bit, but I told you that when I growing up, I was like allergic to poison ivy. I would get it if it's like in the air 2 miles away. And I used to get shots before I go to camp. So I can definitely relate, and I appreciate the gloves, and we'll get everybody to buy them. So let's go back though, because you were saying in your opening that you are, you know, you have a big corporate background in television and things like that. Let's go back, because then you became an entrepreneur and an inventor, and now you're home. So maybe we'll go back to, you know, your career, which gets started, your education, the whole thing.
Definitely. I'd love to. So, so I loved television growing up, and I knew after I got my business degree that I really didn't want to go into business, that I sort of shelved that, figured that maybe later on in the road I would. And I had the opportunity to work at ABC Television in New York on a brand new show that was starting in 1997 called The View. So it's still on, 20 years later, it's still on the air. But the director of the show originally, a wonderful, wonderful, creative, passionate director named Mark Gentile, I had been working for him at Lifetime Television. And he asked me if I would join him at ABC. So he said, the only catch is you're going to have to back time a live television show.
What does that mean?
It means that the show is not live to tape. So if there's an error, if there's a mistake, you can stop after every segment, you can reset as much time as you need. It gets edited and then it gets aired in, whatever time frame, if it's a half an hour show, if it's an hour show. But a live show, you have hard hit commercial breaks. You have a certain amount of time for each segment. And if the hosts, for example, if one segment is slotted for 5:30 and the hosts go 7 minutes, then in the commercial break, I had to scramble with the producers to cut time out of the back end of the show so that we would get off the air at 11:58:30. So it's very stressful. People really just watching TV don't
understand. That was Barbara Walters when it first got started, wasn't it?
Yeah, I remember Barbara Walters.
She's not on it anymore, so.
Right. She's amazing. She's just an icon. And she and Bill Getty, the executive producer of the show, had this vision. And so many shows subsequently, like The Chat and The Talk, have sort of copied the format. And I guess, imitation is the greatest form of flattery.
Right. I guess you're right.
Yeah, it was a formula that just worked. And I was the production assistant, backup stage manager, and backup associate director. And it was an amazing, amazing experience. I loved it.
But isn't it stressful? Like everything's going on at once. You got to do it all and get it done. And you get within the time frame. You can't cut. You can't fix it. You can't do this and that.
Incredibly, yeah, I can imagine. Yeah, incredibly stressful. And I didn't realize, I guess I'm a type A person and I always suffered, I guess, from anxiety, although I never realized it. It was sort of a benefit to me actually in television, because I strove for perfection. I did not let myself make mistakes. I was on all the time. And it wasn't until later in life when I sort of slowed down, I realized that I had anxiety. And I guess, to a certain extent, it really, really worked well for me in television. So I did that for about 7 or 8 years. And then, and then I met my husband and we moved down to North Carolina, and I sort of stepped away from the whole network television aspect of my life.
So what did you do in North Carolina?
So in North Carolina, I actually worked for public television down there, which is a much slower pace. And I was on the floor of the North Carolina State Legislature. I was a camera girl. I ran audio. We taped the sessions for public television. It was a much, much slower pace. Yeah. And it was nice. It was a sort of a good transition for me from the fast pace New York City craziness in my 20s to a little bit slower pace in my 30s.
Got it. Okay. So how long, I know you're in New Jersey now. So how long did you live in North Carolina?
So my husband and I lived in North Carolina for about 2 years. And then we moved to New Jersey via California. He got a job out there he's been working for Johnson & Johnson for many, many years. So he worked for a pharmaceutical company, which was a subsidiary of Johnson & Johnson out in California. So I was out there for 2 years, had my first couple of kids, and then we moved to New Jersey, which is the Garden State. And that's where my love of gardening came in.
Okay. So then once you had your kids, you stopped working, and that's when you started kind of.
Yeah. So when I had my kids, even though we moved back to New Jersey and I was within an hour proximity of New York City, the idea of going back into the city and working in the fast-paced life of television just didn't seem that it would be conducive for giving my kids what I wanted to give them. My mom was a stay-at-home mom, and I always assumed that I would be a stay-at-home mom as well, just because it was so enriching for me to have my mom around. I applaud all the women who make that choice, but my choice was to stay at home with my kids. So I'm not one to sit back and, you know, sort of twiddle my thumbs, and I get restless. So that's where that
I'm type A.
Yeah. So that's where that entrepreneurial spirit started kicking in. And my first foray was writing a book series. Actually, I became an author and because my son was a voracious reader, but he didn't like anything scary. So like the Hardy Boys or Harry Potter, they were all a little bit scary for him in second and third grade. Yeah. So I decided to write a book series. It's called Remote Control Adventures, and they're on Amazon. And he loved them. He ate them up. I have 10 in the series, and I worked on that for about 5 years.
Did you send me one of those books?
I think I did. And you know what? I'm going to reach over here. And I'm going to show you a couple. They're super cute. They're fun.
You sent me one of them.
Yeah. The fun thing, Mitch, about them is that
on my bookshelf somewhere.
Yeah. The fun thing about it is that, it's about two kids who find out that an evil television producer, hello, light bulb, right? finds a portal into TV land and is using magic to steal show scripts, rewrite the ending, and messing up the shows. So the kids have to use their magic remote control to zoom into the TV to find the script, to creatively rewrite the ending, setting things back the way things are supposed to be. So the idea came from, the craziness in TV and the evil television producers who I had worked with in the past.
Nice. Sounds like a little bit of the Magic School Bus, or whatever that was, that show.
Right? Very similar. Mine are Zach and Lana. Theirs were Jack and Annie. You know, it's similar.
Very funny. All right. So you were an author.
Yeah.
Kind of an entrepreneur, right? You have to get your books published, whatever.
Exactly.
Okay. And this was how many years ago was this?
Okay. So that was about 2012 to 2017. Okay. So I worked on the books for about 5 years. And at the same time, I've always been a big gardener. Ever since we moved to New Jersey, they call it the Garden State. And, people, I think, have a very jaded view of New Jersey.
We get a bad rap.
So bad.
Because when you're coming into New Jersey on an airplane, is all you see is like Newark and the Turnpike and all that kind of stuff.
And Elizabeth and the smokestacks.
Yeah, exactly. Oh. Right. All the industry and everything. Exactly. Yeah, it's not most of the state's gardens and the Garden State Parkway goes to parks and beaches. And
it's exactly. Beautiful. Where you live. I mean, you and I are only about 25 minutes apart, and it's gorgeous. Yeah. So, and we're very, very rural here in Central Jersey. I'm just north of Princeton. So I became a big gardener. I have 9 raised beds in my backyard. I grow anything from tomatoes to squash to cucumbers to peppers, really anything I can get my hands on, I throw in the ground.
Raised beds are in like boxes with legs, right? So they're standing up and
no beds. It's kind of like a picture frame with no bottom. They sit there. You have to turn the sod. So you have to flip the grass. Because the grass will grow right through your bed. So you flip the grass. You put your little picture frame raised bed on it. You dump organic soil in, and then you just toss your seeds in, and the weather takes care of everything else.
Oh, that's good. So then the grass grows down and it doesn't grow back up.
Exactly.
Very good.
So less weeding. So let's see, I was getting out of my car one day. This is how my garden sleeves came into existence. I was getting out of my car and I'm, like you said, the poison ivy, I'm incredibly susceptible to poison ivy. When I reach into my tomato plants, I get rashes up and down my arms. So I happened to be getting out of my car and I happened to see three sprigs of something growing in my rock bed. So I got out of my car, I walked over to my rock bed, I picked them up, and then sure enough, 24 hours later, I had poison ivy up and down my arms. Right. So I said to myself, actually, I said to my husband, I need a garden sleeve. Like, as simple as that. I said,
That was the name right there.
I said, yeah. I need a garden sleeve. I need a glove. Here, I'll show you here. I envisioned it. I said, I need a glove sleeve combination, not a tight Kevlar sleeve like you see in a lot of the industrial magazines. I wanted a cute, adorable, functional, yet fashionable sleeve that holds up 100% cotton, really lightweight and breathable, attached to a glove. Yeah. So my arms are protected and then I can dump the whole thing in the wash.
Okay. So, and there was nothing out there that
nothing, Mitch.
I looked.
So am I. I looked on Amazon. I looked on all these gardening sites. Nobody made this.
Right.
So I said, okay, I'll make myself a prototype.
Yeah. Well, necessity is the mother of invention.
Exactly. So right. And I sew. I learned how to sew from altering Irish dance costumes because my kids were both competitive Irish dancers and they needed a seamstress. Right. So I taught myself how to sew.
That's where they wear the wigs with the curls in them, right? Yeah. The whole thing.
Oh yeah. So they needed a seamstress and I said, I can do it because my whole motto is sort of just say yes first and then figure it out later. It's always been like that. I'm like,
you really are a personality.
Yeah.
A type. Hey God. You're like, we need 1,000 of these things. We could do it. And your friend goes, how can we do that? You're like, I don't know. We'll figure it out.
Exactly.
I know people. Yeah. That's so funny.
Exactly. Yeah. So I said, what the heck, you know, I'm going to make myself a prototype. So I did. I love them. I made a second pair so that I could have one in the wash while one was on my gardening boots. And
they were fabulous.
Yeah, they were fabulous. So I was going to leave it at that. But
where'd you get them? You went to a fabric store, you bought the gloves from some gardening store and you just mocked them up?
Yeah, I bought the gloves from, you know, just one of the big department stores. And then, you know, I had cotton poly. We also have nitrile. I had never used nitrile gloves before. So I started off with just a regular standard cotton poly glove.
That's like the ones you sent me?
The ones I sent you were the nitrile. These are, gardeners love these. And I learned, I think as an entrepreneur, you really need to listen to people and to get a lot of feedback.
Yeah.
Because I originally only offered cotton poly gloves because that's what I garden with. And I had gardeners come up to me. I brought my gloves. I'll get back to the patent story in a little bit, but I brought my gloves to the Philadelphia Flower and Garden Show this year and last year. That was sort of my big, you know, introduction into the market. And I had master gardeners coming up to me with a shocked, wow, you know, I could have had a V8 expression on their face, right?
Like, they're why like, didn't they think of that?
Exactly. Right. We love it. But they said, Lynn, can we be honest with you? And I said, talk to me. And they said, you know, we love your sleeve, but we want a nitrile glove because we use these. They're water resistant. You know, when you're digging in wet soil, they're more thorn proof. So I said, okay. You know, I wasn't offended at all that they,
no, you shouldn't be,
you know, at all. So I investigated, I found a company to supply me the nitrile gloves, a terrific company down in North Carolina. I started attaching the nitrile gloves and I have to say, I probably sell them 8 to 1.
Really?
Yeah. It was amazing.
Yeah. I think in the stores, you see more of them too, like at Home Depot and stuff.
Yeah,
than just the cloth ones. But you know, it's funny, the entrepreneurs that I know that, especially if they have products, even more so than services, they're constantly looking for feedback from their customers, from their vendors, from their suppliers, you know, and they're always looking to improve what they have, not just like thinking of it themselves. Okay, you thought of the idea, right? But you could be wrong, right? Maybe you're the only person that needs this. Maybe so you test it. And when you have people that you know, who are in the industry or buying your product, you got to ask them. And a lot of people don't. They just think they know and they're selling their product and they're sending it out there and people are buying it. But if they had the feedback and really knew what they wanted to sell would be, you know, more accepted by the marketplace, their sales could double or triple without, with maybe some minor, you know, changes. You said you found these gloves. Now it's 8-to-1 they're selling, right?
Yeah, it's really, you're so just on target. And when I brought them to the Philly Flower and Garden Show this year, yeah, I had the same master gardeners, because they go every year, come up to me and say, "Ah, you added the nitrile gloves. You did it. Let me buy 3 pairs. I wound up selling 750 pairs in 9 days. Single-handedly, you know, wow, just me. And right, I know there's a market for them.
Okay. This is a business podcast, right? So let's get into, you come up with an idea, but that's not a business.
Correct.
It's just a product, right? So right, take me through that. So you've been in production, you've run shows, you wrote books, but you haven't really run a small business before.
Right.
How did you start? Did you write a business plan and say, this is where I want to go? Or did you just say, well, let's make a pair of gloves and see what happens if anybody wants to buy them?
So what I did was first, I was actually, it's kind of a funny story. So I was getting my hair done and there was a woman sitting next to me. I was telling my hairdresser about the gloves because she and I trade gardening stories. And right, this woman said, you know, I don't mean to interrupt, but you need to patent that idea.
Yeah.
And I said, yeah, I don't know. Patent is kind of expensive. You know,
yeah, she said, it does get expensive,
but she said, it's a fabulous idea. She held up her arms. They were covered in poison ivy. She said, I'll be your first customer. And she apparently had patented a number of things with a big pharmaceutical company. So she was familiar with the process. And she said, really, it's a fabulous idea and you really need to patent it.
Yeah, because it's so easy to steal.
Exactly. So yeah, I did. I found a trademark attorney. So I trademarked the name Nompi, which okay, was my original name for No More right, Poison Ivy. I've subsequently submitted a trademark application for Garden Sleeves since I changed the name.
Right.
And then I submitted a patent on it. And I got the patent about maybe 9 months ago.
Okay.
Design and it's a design patent. I didn't go for, yeah. So, you know, I got it. It was great. So now I started actually taking them to the shows. So I figured I got a website. So I made my own website. And I thought the best way for me to introduce it to the market, the most economical way and the best way would be for me to take it to shows to see if people were interested in this particular product.
Yeah.
And I know I had read that many people, you know, like the MyPillow guy and other people had gone to larger trade shows. And the sticker shock is a little much. I mean, these trade shows can cost anywhere from, you know, $850 to a couple thousand dollars to attend.
Right. But, plus you got to put a booth together or something, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Oh my God. And Mitch, if you had seen my first booth, it was embarrassing. I had like handwritten signs and
right,
I had my stuff just laying on tables and I learned.
But that's okay. That's scrappy and, you know, bootstrapping it. I mean, that's, you don't spend $30,000 on a booth. You don't even know if people are going to buy your gloves, right? I mean,
exactly. So yeah. I started with the Connecticut Flower and Garden Show and the New Jersey Flower and Garden Show. And okay, after meeting other vendors and talking to them about their products and where they've come from and what shows they go to, I got better signage. So I have a beautiful banner now. I have lots of signage. I got a mannequin. Okay. And I actually now have a real professional booth that I can take to shows. So between the website and the shows, COVID really affected that, however, because I was, right, you know, I was really starting to rev up production. I had hired a friend of mine to surge for me. So the two of us were, you know, working really well in tandem making the gloves because we make them all ourselves. I don't outsource them.
Okay.
COVID hit. So our ability to go to the shows was limited because they had canceled everything.
Right.
So that's when.
But everybody was home. Like you needed to reach all these people because they're all home. They could exactly, all bought the gloves if they knew about them, right?
Exactly. So yeah, I did.
That's frustrating.
So I did discover Amazon. So I'm in fulfillment by Amazon also.
Okay.
And I did some Amazon advertising. I hired a woman to help me out with my website for keywords and, you know, search engine optimization.
Right, SEO compliance.
SEO, exactly. And then I hired a publicist to help get the word out because I realized that I needed help. I'm a very good seamstress. And I'm a really good salesperson. If you get me in front of a crowd and I put the gloves on, I am bubbly. It's probably my TV background. I'm bubbly. Right. I'm animated. I mean, I can sell them, but you're not seeing me when you're going to my website.
Right.
So, you know what I mean? So I hired a publicist to help me out to get the word out. And
that's actually how we met, right?
Yep. And that's how we met. Because she's been terrific. Really, really great getting me exposure because it's a great product. But if people don't know about it, then they won't buy it.
Doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So you were telling me, you've kind of been feeling your way through this, right? I mean, it's kind of what happens when you invent something and then you kind of start to figure out how to grow the business, whatever. The patent was a good move.
Yes. So the patent was a great move. And now my business is really at a crossroads. And a lot of mompreneurs or, you know, entrepreneurs, this is where they decide, okay, so I can either keep it a small mom and pop operation and I can continue to sew in the basement for 10 hours a day and try to peddle these things at shows, or I'm going to need to outsource the gloves or get a couple people in to help me make them. And I have to take it to the next level. So that's really where I am.
You're at that crossroad?
Mm-hmm. I am at that crossroad. And I believe that the product has legs. So I'm prepared right now. I've found a fabric manufacturer. So I don't have to just go to Joann's or a wholesaler, Michael's, you know, Walmart and just find fabric wherever I can. I have an actual fabric manufacturer that I'm working with. I have a glove supplier because I don't make the gloves. The gloves I have to, you know, purchase. I have a fabulous glove supplier. And then, you know, my next big, I guess, step would be to either hire a couple of people into my house and make them here. Because we make them all in my basement, which actually recently just flooded because of Ida. Well,
that's a problem, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or get them outsourced. So I'm sort of investigating both, both avenues right now.
Here's a word from our sponsors. Uplift your marketing and reinforce your brand with a digital business card from Digital Accelerant. Use a text marketing combination to stand out in front of your competition. Digital business cards make you memorable and most of all help you bring in new business through its warm lead generator. Motion graphics, intro, outro, and inspirational videos can be added during setup. Text the word LAW to 21000, that's L-A-W to 21000 to learn how to get your own digital business card. Suffering from slow internet speed? Worried about hackers? Fetch Pro gets the internet from your smartphone to your Windows and Mac computer without paying for a hotspot. Always get the fastest, most stable, and secure internet access on your computer with Fetch Pro. Follow their affiliate link on our website to learn more and get connected with Fetch. Printify is the online service that simplifies and automates the process of sourcing and creating print-on-demand products branded with your company logo, product, or service. Printify is a better alternative to pre-purchasing and warehousing your merchandise for distribution or sale. Follow their link from our website to learn how to set up your own online store. And be sure to visit our online store and get yourself some podcast merch. Follow the link in the show notes to learn more about all of our sponsors. And now back to our show.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would think if you grow and the product catches on, right. You can't have 20 seamstresses in your basement doing, I mean, you got to at least rent warehouse space and get something set up. You're probably better off using outsourcing it. I would think, assuming the quality is what you want, you know.
Right, exactly. And that's where the type A in me is a little, kicks in because I trust my own quality control, but it's very hard for me to let go. Another avenue would be to license the patent. And that would be the easiest thing to do because it's a fabulous product. And if I could get somebody else to manufacture it, then...
And just take a royalty.
Exactly. I would take a royalty. I would step away. And then I could continue doing moving on to the next idea. And I do actually have a next idea in the works as well.
Oh, there you go. Good. Yes. All right. So you have some sales. So, you know, maybe you're getting ready for Shark Tank.
Possibly, you know, it's
and
really
some
fun.
Of those guys love licensing deals. They love that stuff.
Oh, I know Mr. Wonderful loves the licensing.
They eat
deals,
this stuff up. They'll be like, yeah, I'll take, you know, $2 a unit. Let's license it and be done with it.
Exactly. So most people I talk to actually think that that's probably the route I should take because it is the easiest as opposed to, you know, as opposed to trying to start get a warehouse and get people to sew. Then you have workman's comp, you have insurance and all of that. So my husband and I right now are working on the business plan and the cost of goods to see exactly how many units I need to sell in order to break even and then what my margin needs to be.
Yeah, I would think if you're outsourcing the production, that's probably somewhere in between you licensing it versus, you know, because you could still oversee the quality of it, the quality control.
Correct.
You can sample the goods. And then if it's not good, you can have them redo it or whatever. But I would think that as a, you know, stay-at-home mom, a personality driven kind of person, you don't want to be using a sewing machine till 10 o'clock at night.
At all.
Yeah. So, you know, you have your rack of gloves behind you. That's probably good with the samples. And now you need to get to, you know, real production.
Exactly.
Especially if you know, these gloves could be ordered by a Lowe's or a Home Depot and they're not going to order 750.
Correct.
They're going to order a quarter of a million, you know, whatever.
Exactly. Yeah. The way Lowe's usually works, Lowe's and Home Depot, is that they will offer them, you'll have a mini deal with them and they'll offer them online only.
Uh-huh. Oh, is that how they start usually instead of certain stores?
Yeah, exactly. So they'll offer them online and should they do well online, then they'll negotiate a larger distribution, putting them in the stores. So I'm actually, my publicist has actually gotten me into the National Hardware Show in October, which is very exciting. So that's in Las Vegas.
Las Vegas. Okay.
It's in Las Vegas. Yeah. So I'm heading out there. I believe it's October. I want to say 21st, 22nd, 23rd that weekend.
Okay.
And all the big players are out there. So Home Depot, Lowe's, HSN, QVC, True Value, they're all out there. And the best case scenario would be, you know, I'm going to be out there with my mannequin and all my displays. And we're going to see if we can get some good national traction.
Nice. So you ship the whole booth out there, right? These people come, they set it up for you, do the whole thing.
Ship the whole booth, the whole kit and caboodle. I can buy a rug from Lowe's when I get there.
Yeah.
And it's just me and my mannequin and my gloves for the weekend. So I'm really, really excited about it. We're going to take them out there, try to pitch to a couple of the larger manufacturers and the larger distribution centers and, you know, see if we can really get this thing kicked off.
Yeah. You know, that's, I got to hand it to you because a lot of people would, you know, the concept is not that complicated, right? Yeah. And you were surprised that it wasn't even out there. So I don't know. Is my video like slow on your end or?
Just a little bit.
I don't know. I'm like talking, then I look at the screen, and I see my lips move like 10 minutes later. I don't know, something with the internet. Right. So you were surprised that it didn't exist. So creating the product is not that difficult in terms of its concept, right? But the ability to turn it into a business, a lot of people will be like, well, you know, I did my gloves and we made 20 or 30 of these things and I gave them to my friends and I sold them at the, you know, at the school bake sale or whatever, and they never really take it any further.
Flower show.
Yeah, but it's really another skill set to be able to take it, you know, to another level, to get professionals involved, to get into shows, to deal with, you know, I mean, like you obviously have it kind of worked out to the point where if Home Depot or Lowe's or True Value or whatever said, hey, we want to carry these in all of our stores, we need, you know, a million units. It might take a little bit of scrambling, but you have the manufacturer, so you could figure a way to, in a decent period of time, to get these units produced.
Exactly.
For their stores. They may want them with, maybe Home Depot wants orange sleeves and they don't need all the fat. I don't know. But I think a lot of people miss that. Like you start a small business, right? You make a product, you're selling. This is, by the way, this is the kind of thing that lends itself to like a craft fair or a street fair, right? So somebody makes these things, right? And they go and they're selling, these are great. And they never really have the skills or spend the time to learn, what do we do next? Like now you're writing a business plan. Well, that makes sense, right? You want to figure out, what does this actually cost me? How many freaking gloves do I need to sell for this to work? And if I don't want to be the one doing this 10 hours a day or having people working in my basement, which is flooded now, we were talking about New Jersey had a lot of water in the last week and a half.
So bad.
What do I do to make this thing, you know, a business? And a lot of people can't, you know, they can't get out of their own way. They're just going to the craft fairs. They're loading their car up every weekend. They're selling, I don't know how many you sell at a craft fair, hundreds of units.
Maybe 100.
Yeah. It's
100 tough, max.
It's really kind of like a lifestyle. It becomes like a lifestyle business.
You know what my mother always called it? Because my dad was in the model railroad train business for hobby. She called it the traveling circus.
Yeah.
So they would go, the same vendors would go from show to show to show. They all knew each other. And I'm not knocking it at all. I have to say trade show people are the sweetest, coolest people I've ever met.
Right.
But, you know, it's like the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. It depends on what avenue you want to take. Do you want to be the worker that, you know, like you said, sits at the sewing machine for 10 hours a day? And, you know, to sort of put my heart out there, Mitch, I'll be honest. You know, I had COVID in February. This is right right before the shots came out. And then I had a heart attack at the end of March.
Oh my goodness.
They think it was probably COVID related. They don't know.
Really?
They never found any blockage or anything. And, you know, that was my epiphany. That was my aha moment, because I said, you know, I'm sitting here and I'm sewing whatever, hundreds of pairs of gloves every week, and I could be gone tomorrow. So I'm going to see this through, and I want this to get big, because if it doesn't, okay, at least I can say that I tried it.
Right.
But I really believe that, you know, that you just have to be open to learning. You have to be open to listening and open to learning. And if you can do that and just, you know, just open up your, you know, and not live life in fear.
Right.
Because, you know, people, it's interesting. There was a quote by Jeff Wheeler, because I love fantasy and he's one of my favorite authors. And it was a quote that he wrote about fear. He said, and I'll paraphrase it because I don't know the exact quote, but he said, you know, we fear what we know. We fear what we don't know. We fear what we have. We fear what we don't have. You know, the greatest peril that faces people is living their life in fear.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to be that person. I don't want to be afraid of failure or afraid of success.
It paralyzes a lot of people. Yeah.
It paralyzes.
And the last thing you want to do is drop dead of heart attack behind a sewing machine after you're sewing 10 hours a day. I mean, it's just not, you know, but now you're an inventor. You said you're working on another product. I'm sure it's related somehow, right?
It's actually not related at all.
It's not at all related.
It's really funny. So
it's not a gardening product.
No, I can't tell you the specifics, but, it's really fun. It's an idea I had, you know, a couple years ago, and it has to do with like the restaurant industry and everything, but I have to say, just having had this whole experience and it being so successful, because I know they can sell and I know they will.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I'm taking the ride on this, but I have this whole nother idea in the works. And again, my husband and I were talking about it. I was brushing my teeth the other day and I said, you know, do you remember the idea I had a couple of years ago? I think I really can do it now, because my fear is gone and my enthusiasm is there. And you know what I love most about running a company and about growing a company? It's what I'm teaching my kids, because they're watching their mom, who is a stay-at-home mom. You know, they kind of thought of me as their playmate. They're watching me take the chances and design labels and sew the sleeves and take it to the shows and come home and tell them I sold 500 units, 750 units, 1,000 units.
Yeah.
And it's really enlightening for them and it's exciting for them. And my 11-year-old actually just learned how to sew at camp and started making pin cushions. And he said, Mom, can you give out a free pin cushion to everybody who buys a pair of gloves? I said, you're awesome. You're awesome, dude. Sounds good.
No, I think the younger kids learn those skills, you know, the better off they are, because a lot of it is, like you said, fear. And once you've done it and you're like, yeah, I know how to do that. There's not so much of an unknown when it comes to, you know, this kind of stuff. Because look, business, there is a very high failure rate in businesses. But a lot of it has to do with the lack of preparation and, like you said, learning, because there are tried and true principles to running a business. Like you've picked up a lot of those along the way. And now you're going to do it with it. You're a real inventor. You're inventing a product. It's not even like an expansion of the line that you're working on. Right. So, but the principles are the same. Writing a business plan is the same. Figuring out what the actual cost of the product is versus the actual cost of running the rest of the business. It's the same. You know, it may be a different industry, but you'll find other trade shows. You'll find other ways to access the industry to get to restaurant associations, whatever it happens to be, to do that, because you did it once. And I think that a lot of people, they do try and they want to be successful, but it's like you said, maybe it is humble, maybe it's fear, that they're afraid to ask the question to, hey, will you help me? I mean, that's what mentors are for, and absolutely, advisors and people that have been there. That's why other people come on the podcast, so they can share the four times they failed and the six times they succeeded and what they learned along the way, you know? And I think, you know, when kids learn that stuff young, it really, you know, empowers them, because they do have a lot of ideas. They are very creative.
Incredible.
They're out there in the world solving problems all the time. But if they see as an adult, like when I was a teenager and in high school, I didn't really have confidence. That's the word, confidence to run my own business. I mean, I did things. I had like a detailing company and I did different things, you know, but I really didn't understand the principles, and nobody ever told me what I really needed to make this into a, you know, a business. Like, that's what adults do. I looked at it like, I'm not an adult, you know, but I think teaching your kids is something that people should do. If they're succeeding in business, they're learning things, teach your kids. Get them out there. Let them, you know, join an academy or, I don't know. There's not a lot of different stuff out there, but that's exciting. I mean, that's exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also just admitting, understanding, and you can even write lists of what your strengths are and what your weaknesses are. And really, you know, taking advantage of your strengths, but acknowledging your weaknesses, and then bringing people in who can help you with that. Right. Because I have to tell you, I hate rejection. So that's my biggest thing. I really, you know, I did a foray in my early 20s before I wound up in TV and acting. And I realized very quickly that I really would get very personally hurt with rejection.
Yeah. So probably a lot of that in acting, right?
A lot of that. Right. So it's very hard for me to go to a store with a box of gloves and say to them, hey, I have this product, you know, would you carry
it? Who are you? What? Leave your card there. Right.
Exactly. So I know that that's hard for me. So I have friends who take my gloves when they go to garden centers around New Jersey, and they're much better at that because they don't have a personal stake in it. So they're much better, and they take them into stores and they say, hey, would you like to carry 5 of these, 10 of these, 7 of these? And that's been a very, very successful sort of avenue for me as well, getting people to help me with that. And then, like I said, hiring the publicist was huge. Andrea is great. She's been, you know, my biggest cheerleader because, you know, the marketing and the sales aspect are not my strength. I am the creator. I am the seamstress. I have a very incredibly creative mind between the books and, you know, the acting and the sewing, but the nuts and bolts, I definitely needed help with that. So I feel like I have a really, really good team behind me now that can really, you know, take this product, you know, to the next level.
Yeah. I mean, you're doing all the right things there. I always say that if there's four main components of a business plan, one of them is the people side of the business, right? Because there's no way that you and I could run a business and we have all the skills. I mean, we just don't. So you have to, you know, could you sell and go into stores? Yeah. Does it make you comfortable? No. And would you be very successful at it? No, because you're not comfortable doing it to begin with. So you recognize that and you learn ways to fill, I'm sure you can find somebody who sews better than you too, and would be much more efficient at it. And probably make 4 times the amount of gloves that you can make, because it doesn't make any sense for you to be doing that, right? Except at the beginning, right? So, I mean, I outsource a lot of the podcasting stuff. I didn't used to do that. Some mm-hmm. of it I do myself because it's creative and I want to do it. But is it a good use of my time? Absolutely not. So right. I think that people, that's part of what they're doing. They have to figure out if that leads to failure in business and frustration in business because you're doing things that you hate. Right. That right. like if you really had to peddle this door to door and that was the only way you thought it should be done and you had to handle it yourself and nobody can sell these things and you probably would hate what you're doing and you'd exactly. eventually drop it and not do it.
Exactly. And I think the greatest gift in a career is to be getting paid to do something you love. I mean, that yeah. is that no is huge. About it. No question yeah. about it. Whether, you know, whether you're a weatherman or whether you're a pharmacist, like you really need to love what you do. Yeah. And then to get paid to do what you love to do. I mean, come on. And that's what I tell my kids too. My son just started at Rutgers and, get as much out of it as you can and make sure whatever you wind up doing, you're passionate about because yep. as long as if you have passion and you live your life with passion, then whatever you do, you're going to pour your heart and soul in and it's going to be great. Whether it fails or whether it succeeds, it was never the wrong. So another motto I live by is, there's no wrong decision. It was the right decision at the time.
Right. And that's a very good comment because I think that's true with a lot of things.
Right.
You know, and I also think that, life is hard. It doesn't happen in a straight line. You know, if you love what you do, you'll love it on the hard days, just like on the easy days, right? Because if you hate it, you'll hate it on the good days. Forget about when it's really hard. Really hard. You're just going to give up and go home.
Right.
So I always say to people, listen, if you love what you do, if you can love it on the hardest days, you'll be fine. You know, you'll get through it and you'll want to go through it. If not, people don't like pain. Right. They shy away, right? I mean, they just totally shy away from it. And they're like, oh my God, I would never do this. I mean, I'm an attorney, right? So, but it's a great idea. And I do have the same problem. My wife and I, we got poison ivy. She gardens. I remember we moved into our house. We don't live in that house anymore, but in the backyard was an older home. The guy had died. We bought it from the estate. House needed a ton of work. In the backyard, there were all kinds of trees and everything. So my wife's from Florida. So we're out doing work. So she calls me across the yard. She goes, hey, what is this? And she holds it up. It's one of those big hairy roots, those poison ivy. I go, that's poison ivy. So for the next month, we were scrubbing ourselves with that stuff, you know, you put on Tecnu or whatever it's called. Oh my God. And it's so, and she's not even allergic to poison ivy like I am. And it was just a nightmare, but this would have saved us, but I would never do that.
And I have to tell you, the gardening community is a very, very tight knit community. Like gardeners love to share success stories. They love to share failure stories. They love to share scars. I mean, I have people come up to me at shows. Again, first they had the light bulb moment. So they stop in front of my booth. They look at my gloves. They look at the name. Their jaw drops and they're like,
why didn't I think of that?
Why the heck didn't I think of that? That's ingenious.
Yeah.
And, then what they'll do is, of course, they'll try on the gloves because they're fabulous, but they'll show me their scars, the nicks, the cuts, the poison ivy scars. And they're like, I could have used this 3 years ago. So my comment always is, all right, so
use them now.
Buy them now and you'll use them for the next 3 years.
Right. Exactly.
But it's been fun. I mean, I have to say, when I worked in television, that was my family because TV, TV crews and everything, they're amazing. And then having this gardening niche also, it's just been so fulfilling because the gardeners are great. The master gardeners are inviting me to speak at different engagements and, different conferences they have. I went to a poison ivy conference at the Philadelphia Zoo.
There's such thing as a poison ivy conference?
There is such thing as a poison ivy conference.
Wow.
It's amazing. So this was before COVID. So, I happened to go on YouTube because I was looking, to make comments.
Wait, Lynn, you have to back up. What happens at a poison ivy conference? That's what I want to know.
Okay. So there are actually guys who specialize in removing poison ivy, guys and girls. I mean, they're
obviously a whole industry if they're having a trade show. But
whole industry. So they rented space. It was a whole weekend thing. I was only able to go for a day because I have young kids. So but they sit there, they talk about the biology.
Were there other types of ivy in the weekend, or is it just all poison ivy the whole weekend?
All poison ivy the whole weekend. Okay.
So the poison sumacs, the other things, they have their own conference.
They have their own conference. Touch upon it, but East Coast is mostly poison ivy. So
that's
there
funny.
Were guys from Connecticut, New Hampshire, from Massachusetts. Yeah. And we all were in this conference room at the Philadelphia Zoo. And the first guy spoke and he talked about the biology of poison ivy and how it's evolved or how it evolved over the years and how, you know, different species are immune to it. And they actually are attracted to the little, you know, the little sprigs and they eat it. I mean, it was fascinating. And then there was a woman who wrote a book about poison ivy. You know, everybody was speaking about it, but they invited me to come and introduce my gloves. And those guys were talking to me about, you know, what type of gloves they would like, what type of sleeves. You know, I wound up making a couple sales there, but that wasn't my primary focus. It was really just to sort of learn, because poison ivy was my first idea. That's where the gloves came in, was to help protect against poison ivy. And as the product evolved and as my learning and as my, you know, exposure evolved, I learned that the gloves could be used for, you know, for so much more than that. And that's again,
You get stuck and poked all the time when you're gardening. They have those burrs that stick to you and thorns and there's all kinds of stuff that you
So that's also another reason why I changed the name to Garden Sleeves. Because I was afraid that I was pigeonholing myself into just poison ivy, which is primarily on the East Coast. But the gloves are used for prickers, for sun, for there's now this invasive species up in upstate New York, wild parsnip, that apparently if you brush it, it looks like Queen Anne's lace. So it's a yellow version of Queen Anne's lace. And if you brush your arm against it, you actually blister. It's actually worse than ivy. Yeah. I learned about this. I learned about
wild parsnip.
Wild parsnip.
But don't we eat parsnip?
We eat parsnip. And the wild parsnip, you can still, from what I understand, don't quote me on this. Some people in Syracuse were telling me you can still eat the root. But if the plant itself touches your skin, you'll wind up with a blistering rash, much like poison ivy. Yeah, I had no idea. And as I'm driving down the highway from Syracuse back to Jersey, I was like, hey, there's
now you saw it.
Oh, my God. I thought it was Queen Anne's lace. So it's fascinating.
Wow.
Yeah, fascinating. So that's why the gloves are just, I mean, they're great. They're arm savers. They're garden sleeves.
Right. Well, I got to say, I'm excited to see what you do like in the future. You got this other thing. So you have to come back and give us an update when the next product comes out. And you give us an update on the garden sleeves and where those are. Maybe I'll start seeing them in stores. If anybody, we'll put a link in the show notes for people to buy them. Right now, you can buy them on Amazon, right? They're not in any stores?
Right now, they are only locally in stores in New Jersey. So,
like what kind of stores? Like out by you or?
Yeah, out by me. Like Ace Hardware carries them. God bless Matt.
Okay.
In Skillman, New Jersey was the first to say, hey, you know, you help us out. We're going to help you out. They were the first to put, he was just a sweetheart. So they put my gloves in there. Bellmead Co-op, which is a wonderful co-op here in Montgomery, New Jersey. They carry them. Beautiful farm in Manalapan, New Jersey called Maple Leaf Farms has a fabulous garden center. They took, I did a cold call with my friend Leslie. I went into their store and, you know, I sort of swallowed and I walked up to them and I showed them. They called me the next day and said, yeah, we'll take two dozen.
And they the products move. They sell their own reordering.
They're fabulous. Yeah. So they're here. I do have my website, which is mygardensleeves.com. So I do sell them primarily through my website and also through Amazon. If you look up garden sleeves on Amazon, you'll find them there as well.
Yeah, just Google it. You'll end up on the Amazon.
Just Google
site,
it. Sure. Exactly.
Exactly. Well, I appreciate your advice because you gave really good advice for, you know, business owners in general and for people listening, you know, do the research. If you have a great product, ask, test.
Definitely.
You know, yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, you got to make sample products and you got to try things out. And then if they're in the garden business, now they know there's a poison ivy convention or poison ivy drink show. That is crazy. I probably should have gone when I was younger. I would have figured out how to solve my problem being allergic to poison ivy. But
exactly. They were awesome. They were awesome. Those guys were terrific.
That's really nice. Well, I appreciate coming on the show. Thanks so much for your time. Thanks to Andrea for introducing us. And if anybody is a gardener out there, or you like to work in the yard, not just gardening, if you're working in the yard,
you're weeding. Yeah.
Get your garden sleeves, because if not, you're going to end up with all kinds of things tearing up your arms, and it's not good. So Lynn, I thank you again for coming on the show.
Thanks, Mitch. You're terrific. I appreciate it.
If you like the podcast, please tell others about us. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, on Google Podcasts, on Amazon Music, and many of the other podcast directories. If you like what you hear, please leave us a 5-star review and feel free to share our episodes on social media. If you have any questions or comments, ideas for the show, or you'd even like to appear as a guest, reach out to us by email at info@beinhackerlaw.com. The Accidental Entrepreneur is hosted and produced by me, Mitch Beinhacker. If you'd like more information about my legal services, you can find me on social media or visit my website at beinhackerlaw.com. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe to our feed to be notified of all future episodes.